Last two chapters, which we went through quite quickly, we heard how Arjuna had been sent to Dwarka to find out about Krishna's activities. And there, while he was in Dwarka, which was not written about in that 14th chapter, but rather it's written in the 11th canto, we heard how Krishna, the pastime in which Krishna, although being fully transcendental, left this world, his disappearance pastime. Then, after that, Arjuna returned to Hastinapur from Dwarka, and in between the time that Krishna left this world and Arjuna returned, Yudhisthira Maharaj was observing so many inauspicious symptoms. And due to these inauspicious symptoms, he intuited that the only cause of this inauspiciousness, the only cause could be that Krishna has left this world. And his heart sank. Because for the Pandavas and all the great devotees who actually have a relationship with Krishna, the absence of Krishna, the separation from Krishna, burns them like fire. Practically it is intolerable for them. It is worse than a death. This is the meaning of their devotion. That they are with Krishna, his sweetness, his personality, his qualities are so astoundingly attractive that the absence of Krishna burns them like fire. So finally, when Arjuna returned, Yudhisthira Maharaj saw the dejected look upon his face and began questioning him. First about many members of Krishna's family, because he had returned from Dwarka, so he was asking, how are the Yadus, how is this one, how is that one? But actually he knew the answer already. And then finally he asked, what could be the cause of Arjuna's dejection? Had he done something wrong? Had he acted improperly? Had he been defeated in battle by those not worthy of defeating him? And then he concluded by saying that the only real cause of the dejection that I perceive in your countenance could be that Krishna has left. Arjuna, practically speaking, could not reply because the tears were flowing from his eyes and his voice was choked. But yet, after some time, he began to speak. And he said, yes, that personality who was my dear friend, because the relationship between Arjuna and Krishna was so intimate, so many exchanges, so much protection, so much empowerment of Arjuna by Krishna, so much loving exchange, so much teasing and joking and intimacy. And Arjuna said, yes, that person, Krishna, who is the cause of all causes, the source of the universe, of all the universes. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava, maintaining, supporting everything, he has gone. That personality has left the world. And therefore, the powers that I had which are no longer, because Arjuna was the great wielder of the bow. With his Gandiva bow, by Krishna's mercy, he had practically single-handedly won the battle of Kurukshetra. He stood before so many heroes that in one sense were so much more powerful than him, but because Krishna was driving his chariot, and because Krishna was directly instructing him, and because Krishna was empowering him, he and the Pandavas emerged victorious. And then he said, now that power has been withdrawn, and I've been defeated on my mission to bring back the wives of Krishna as instructed by Krishna, bring them back to Hastinapur. I've been defeated by some cowherd men armed with bows and arrows. You see this in Vrindavan, that sometimes the farmers will carry a bow and arrows to frighten the birds from the trees who are eating the fruits. So coward men with that caliber of bows and arrows, they have defeated me. Actually, they were Krishna's own potency. As we heard from the words of Srila Prabhupada's purport, quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who had researched the point from the Puranas, that these cowherd men were not ordinary. They were Krishna's potency, and he had stolen back his own queens before they had been cursed. So Arjuna was lamenting like that. And then he began to remember those instructions that Krishna had given him in the Bhagavad Gita. And we learn from that in times of difficulty, the cause of difficulty in this world is the breaking of our connection with Krishna. There is no other cause, because we are Krishna's angsa. We are Krishna's part and parcel. Mamai vangso jivaloke jiva bhuta sanata. We are eternal. But being cut off from Krishna in our consciousness, our relationship with Krishna can never be cut off, but being cut off, forgetful of Krishna, having turned our back, trying to bhogavanchakari, to enjoy all our desires, that is the source of our misery. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Krishna, the Shiksha Guru of everyone, reconnects us with Krishna in our relationship with Krishna, in our natural relationship with Krishna, as He is our Lord and we are His servant. And based on that serving mood, the intimacy of the loving relationship develops so wonderfully. So Arjuna remembered the instructions, manmana bhava madbhakto madhiji mam namaskuru mam evyasyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime, that Krishna promises that if you focus your consciousness upon me, manmana bhava madbhakto, and you become my devotee, mam evyasyasi, you will come to me as samsaya, without a doubt. Practically speaking, one who focuses his consciousness on Krishna in that way, they are with Krishna continuously. Madhya ji mam namaskuru, you worship me and you offer me your obeisances, Krishna says. And Sarvadamam, this instruction, these four things, compressed into one thing, is Sarvadamam Pratyaga. This is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. You give yourself completely into Krishna's service. Give up the sense of duality, that I am separate from Krishna, or in fact that anything is separate from Krishna. See everything in relationship to Krishna and Krishna's service. Hamtam sava papevyo. I will free you from all difficulties, from all previous reactions that are due to you. Mahasucha, Krishna says, do not fear. So Arjuna fixed himself in the ambrosial nectar of Krishna's words, and thus fixed himself as a servant of Krishna and felt directly Krishna's presence. And therefore, his illusory separation from Krishna was cancelled. And rather, he was experiencing Krishna again, and therefore, everything negative was gone. Really, this is our challenge. Because we're in this world and we suffer, and we try to manipulate the material energy and moving this here and there to try to remove the suffering, when actually the real thing is to surrender, to be Krishna conscious, to be fully, to associate with Krishna in Krishna consciousness by developing devotional service of serving mood. So Arjuna, teaching us, remove the, quote, the trash from the heart, or the anartha, those things which are truly of no value from within our consciousness, within the consciousness. Now, in text 32, actually in text 31, it's a so nice summary of the Bhagavad Gita and how to see Krishna everywhere in Prabhupada's purport. By attainment of absolute knowledge, one can be in association with the Lord constantly, even in this present life. That means to possess the love, the prema necessary to see Krishna when we see the material world. Ishtadeva Sputi. See everything. Stavaram jagamam deki na deki taramuti. That the person who has love for Krishna, when he looks at that of the material world, he doesn't exactly see those things of the material world, but he sees rather Ishtadeva Sputi. Manifestations, simply manifestations of Krishna, but that consciousness is not cheap. It's purity. It takes prema. It takes love for Krishna. But yet, simply by hearing, chanting, and thinking, even in this present life, constantly thinking of Krishna, one can see him, one can feel his presence through the process of devotional service. So this is wonderful, and we should grasp this as the signpost guiding our life, that this is what we are meant to do. To learn the art of seeing Krishna always, constantly, everywhere, in everything. By chanting, by hearing, the heart is purified. By serving, the heart is purified, so we're able to do this. So, in text 32, which we're up to from 32 to the end of the chapter, that Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was questioning and fearing the worst, so to speak, he heard that Lord Krishna had returned to his abode, and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he saw what Arjuna did. He saw how Arjuna had pulled himself from misery, the misery caused by duality, seeing things separate from Krishna. He saw how Arjuna had done that. And he decided to go back home, back to Godhead. He began to deliberate on Krishna, on his comings and goings from the material world, because he thought of the Bhagavad Gita also, where Krishna says, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo vetitat fata. how Krishna explains that if one truly knows, has deeply studied and truly knows the mystery, the facts about Krishna's birth, activities and disappearance from the material world, how they are completely transcendental, how they have nothing to do with the material world, how Krishna comes and he goes, but he is eternally existing. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, so a person like that, Punal Janmana Vidita, he doesn't take birth again. So Yudhisthira Maharaj fixed his mind on the transcendental knowledge about Krishna's position and who he was, and in ecstasy thinking how he had been associating with Krishna, that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Remembering Krishna, he too decided to go back home, back to Godhead. Kunti Devi, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead with full attention and thus gained release from the course of material existence. So Kunti Devi heard what had happened and she said, now is the time for me too to leave this world. And how did she do it? By engaging in devotional service with full attention. What does that mean, full attention? It means that the mind is fixed upon pleasing Krishna and there's no other thought in the mind continuously. Continuously. With full attention. How, that is what devotional service is. I am doing this to please Krishna. I'm focusing my mind on Krishna for his pleasure. Chanting his names. Dancing. For his pleasure. Devotional service constantly. Savai pumsam paradamo. This is actually the paradama. The supreme religion for a person. Yattir bhaktir hokshajay. Bhakti tuir hokshajay. He who, although seems to be in the material world, is never actually in the material world, who is beyond the material world, beyond anyone's ability to perceive him. Ahaitukiya pratiyata. That devotional service is to satisfy Krishna and to satisfy us. Has to be unmotivated for Krishna's pleasure and continuous. So Kunti Devi did that. And that pure devotional service allows one to go back home, back to Godhead. This is the price. Now, text 34. The Supreme Unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies. And thus he relieved the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, although both are the same to the controller. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that the, quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that as Suta Goswami was reciting this narration to the sages of Namasharanya, they were very distressed to hear about the departure of the Yadu dynasty from this world. So Prabhupada explains, to give them relief from this mental agony, Suta Goswami assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies by which they had to take away the burden of the world. The Lord and his eternal associates appeared on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. He therefore called for some of his the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve him in his great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods, by the will of the Lord, relinquished their corporal bodies by fighting amongst themselves and the madness of intoxication. So therefore this verse is spoken, how Lord Krishna caused this to happen. And when Krishna causes something to happen, that cannot be the cause of distress, because Krishna by definition is all good. That means that everything he does is good, and only good will come from everything he does. The Supreme Lord, and he continued speaking in this vein, the Supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifested to diminish the burden of the earth. Just like a magician, he relinquished one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnations and others. So this verse explains that just as a magician may perform a show, and in that show his body may be burned to ashes, or in that show someone may take out a saw and cut the magician in half, but actually it's not really what happens. The magician is never burnt to ashes, and he's not really cut into half. Does the audience lacks knowledge and therefore is bewildered? So Krishna's position is like that, that he is eternal and he appears to disappear, to die or something like that. But it is like the magician and his tricks. So we should never become bewildered by that. And in this regard, there's one verse in the 11th canto with an interesting commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Read, here's the verse. This is from the 31st or the final chapter in the 11th canto, which also describes the disappearance of Krishna from this world. Rajan parasya tanu brijanana pyayeha maya vidambanam avehiyata natasya shrishvatmanaidam anuvishya virityachante samrityachatma mahino parata saaste. My dear king, Sukadeva Goswami says to Krishna Maharaj, you should understand that the Supreme Lord's appearance and disappearance, which resemble those of embodied conditioned souls, are actually a show enacted by the illusory energy, by his illusory energy, just like the performance of an actor. After creating this universe, he enters into it, plays within it for some time, and at last winds it up. Then the Lord remains situated in his own transcendental glory, having ceased from the functions of cosmic manifestation. So here is the purport from this verse. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the so-called fight amongst the members of the Yadu dynasty was actually a display of the pastime potency of the Lord, since Lord Krishna's personal associates are never subject to ordinary birth and death like conditioned souls. This being the case, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is transcendental to material birth and death, as clearly stated in this verse. The word natasya of an actor or magician is significant here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti tells the following story of a certain magician who exhibits the trick of dying. In front of a great king, a magician approaches a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth are all placed there by the king. Taking a jeweled necklace, the magician tells the king, "Now I am taking this necklace and you can't have it." And he makes the necklace disappear. Did anyone ever see a really good magician? Did anyone ever see that?
On television.
It's quite astounding what they can do. When I was in Bombay one time, there was this one magician who had performed on the stage in the temple, and then I went and met him, and with Jagarupad when he was young. So he took out a whole stack of coins in front of him. And then he went like this, and he changed one into the other, and the next one into the next one, made them disappear right in front of him. But I know something about sleight of hand, so I was watching him carefully, but it was actually quite astounding. Just like big coins, little coins coming, going, 2, 3, 1, 0, boop. It was really interesting. But in any case, this is something a little different. So the magician takes a necklace and makes it disappear and tells the king, you can't have it. Generally speaking, it's not proper or wise, if one values one's life, to tell the king, here's, I've taken your necklace and you can't have it. And then he made the necklace disappear. Now, he said, I'm taking the gold coins and you can't have them either. And he makes the gold coins disappear. Next, challenging the king in the same way, the magician makes 7,000 horses disappear. This is something extraordinary. The magician creates the illusion that the king's children, grandchildren, brothers, and other family members have attacked each other, and nearly all are dead from the violent quarrel. The king hears the magician speaking and at the same time observes these things taking place before him as he sits in the assembly hall. Then the magician says, O king, I no longer wish to live, just as I have studied magic. So also, by the mercy of the lotus feet of my guru, I have learned the mystic meditation of yoga. One is supposed to give up one's body while meditating in a holy place. And since you have performed so many pious activities, you are a holy place yourself. Therefore, I shall now give up my own body. Thus speaking, the magician sits down in the proper yogic posture. He fixes himself in pranayama, pratyahara, dharan, dhyan, and samadhi, and he becomes silent. A moment later, a fire generated from his trance blazes forth out of his body and burns it to ashes. Then all the wives of the magicians, distraught with lamentation, enter into that fire. This would be really big on television, wouldn't it be? 3 or 4 days later, after the magician has returned to his own province, he sends one of his daughters to the king. The daughter tells him, O king, I have just come to your palace, bringing along with me invisibly all your sons, grandsons, and brothers in good health, along with all the jewels and other items given by you. Please, therefore, give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death. One could say extraordinary magic. And therefore, it continues. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although transcendental to the laws of nature, exhibits his illusory potency that an ordinary fool will think that the Lord has left his body like a human being. Actually, Lord Krishna returned to his abode in his own eternal body, is confirmed throughout the Vedic literatures. So Krishna's bodies are all eternal, and he performs these activities like an actor or a magician, performs so many activities, but actually it's something completely different than what the audience perceives. So that aside was given by Suta Goswami to the sages of Namasaranya to reassure them, because they were very upset to hear about Krishna's disappearance and the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. And now back to Maharaj Yudhisthira and the other members of the Pandava family. Maharaj Yudhisthira was intelligent enough to understand the influence of the age of Kali, because he had perceived what was going to happen, because he had perceived the symptoms were already manifest. Characterized, and this is what Kali Yuga is like, by increasing avarice. What does avarice mean? Greed. Nasty greed and envy and horrible qualities. Because when one is greedy, even if he possessed the whole world, it wouldn't be sufficient to satisfy him. So Kali characterized by increasing avarice, falsehood. What is falsehood?
Lying.
That's Kali. Everyone will just lie and lie and lie. They'll build nuclear weapons and explain we need these for peace. They can destroy the whole world, and the reason why we require them is for the peace of the world. Violence throughout the capital, the state, home, and individuals. So he wisely prepared himself to leave home, and he dressed himself accordingly. So here, this is a very interesting purport. The present age is influenced by the specific qualities of Kali. Since the days of the battle of Kurukshetra about 5,000 years ago, the influence of the age of Kali began manifesting. And from authentic scriptures, it is learned that the age of Kali is still to run on for 427,000 years. The symptoms of the Kali Yuga, as mentioned above, namely avarice, falsehood, diplomacy, cheating, nepotism, violence, and all such things, so it's already going on in this level, and no one can imagine it's what is going to happen gradually with further increase of the influence of the age of Kali to the day of annihilation. How bad it's going to get, we can't even imagine. We don't even want to imagine. We have already come to know that the influence of the age of Kali is meant for godless so-called civilized men. Those who are under the protection of the Lord have nothing to fear from this horrible age. Maharaj Yudhisthira was a great devotee of the Lord, and there was no necessity of his being afraid of the age of Kali. But he preferred to retire from active household duties and prepare himself to go back home, back to Godhead. So one could ask, why did Maharaj Yudhisthira leave? His business was to protect these citizens and protect himself, and he had nothing to fear for himself, and he could have stayed and protected the citizens. The Pandavas are eternal companions of the Lord, and therefore they are more interested in the company of the Lord than anything else. Beside that, being an ideal king, Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to retire just to set an example for others. As soon as there is some young fellow to look after the household affairs, one should at once retire from family life to uplift oneself to spiritual realization. One should not rot in the dark well of household life till one is dragged out by the will of Yamaraj's death. Modern politicians should take lessons from Maharaj Yudhisthira about voluntary retirement from active life and should make room for the younger generation. Also, retired old gentlemen should take lessons from Maharaj Yudhisthira and leave home for spiritual realization before forcibly dragged away to meet death. No one ever thinks it's going to happen to them. We think that we're going to live in this world 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, well, you know, until it gets boring or something. Practically, we think we're never going to die. Practically speaking, we think like that because we're eternal souls. But yet, our body will certainly deny it. It is unstoppable. This is the stringent law of nature. But no one thinks like that. And rather, we cling to our material life as if it will last forever. So Maharaj Yudhisthira showed the example. He decided, and he dressed himself appropriately. And we'll hear what that is like. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapur, he enthroned his grandson, who was trained and equally qualified as the emperor and master of all lands bordered by the seas. So he didn't just whimsically give up. He installed someone who was fully qualified to protect the kingdom. And that was Maharaj Prickett, who had been born before. Now that was described in chapter 12, and we're already on chapter 15. So tomorrow we'll go back and hear about the birth of Maharaj Prickett, and then onward to the activities of Maharaj Prickett, and then onward still further to the death of Maharaj Prickett. So we installed him as the king. Then he, Maharaj Yudhisthira, posted Vajra, the grandson, or the grandson of Aniruddha, the son of Aniruddha, the great-grandson of Lord Krishna, at Mathura as the king of Surasena. Afterwards, Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the Prajapatya sacrifice and placed himself in himself the fire for quitting household life. So he became determined. He who was the king of the world, who had unlimited opulence at his disposal, the jewels, the armies, the kitchen, the wives, the musicians, the wealth, the everything at his disposal, such as the silks and the jewels. He placed in himself through sacrifice the fire of renunciation within his heart. And he relinquished all his garments, the royal garments, the belt and ornaments of the royal order, the crown, everything. And he became completely disinterested and unattached to everything due to the strength of his purity. He became detached in that way. Not easy to do. We romantically look at it. How wonderful it is, and one day I shall... But then when it's time to become detached, you know, we make sure we have our wallet and our credit cards and our this and our that and our this and our that, as if these things are preparation for death, because we can't take anything with us, not a thing. Not one pinch of anything can we take with us. So it is wise to prepare for death, which is inevitable, by detaching ourselves before that time, so we can detach ourselves from matter, so we can attach ourselves to Krishna. And then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind. It's interesting that this description of what he did was quite similar to what we heard that Dhritarashtra did in the previous chapters. He did this by, through yogic practices. He amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as pure self, his consciousness was fully detached from matter. He became free from the material conception of life. Now there's Prabhupada's purport in this regard is quite interesting. Maharaj Yudhisthira, like his brother Arjun, began to concentrate and gradually became freed from material bondage. First he concentrated all the actions of his senses and amalgamated them into the mind. Or in other words, he turned his mind towards the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind would wind up its material activities and be turned towards the transcendental service of the Lord. There was no longer any need for material activities. This is so hard. At the time of death, 5 minutes before death, it is hard to do this. To think there's no more any need for any material activities. I should focus my consciousness fully under the protection and fully focused upon Krishna. It is so difficult to do this. So he prayed to wind up all material activities of the mind, because the mind is the center of our material life. It's due to the attachments of the mind in the mood of enjoyment. wanting to squeeze pleasure, looking at everything as sense objects. That is what keeps us in the material world. So he prayed to detach. There's no longer any need for this. I'm no longer the king. And now it is time for me to go back home, back to Godhead. So he became detached on one side and he focused his consciousness upon Krishna. And he prayed that his mind would wind up his material activities and be turned towards the transcendental service of the Lord. That means devotional service. That means loving service. There was no longer need for material activities. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul. But the quality of the activities can be changed from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. That is the challenge of our life. Thus annihilating, text 42, the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one nescience and then absorbed that nescience in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. After that, Maharaj Yudhisthira dressed himself in torn clothing. He gave up eating all solid food. He voluntarily became dumb and let his hair hang loose. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything. And just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. He just focused his consciousness completely within, absorbing it in Krishna and Krishna's service. He then started towards the north. That means towards the Himalayas. Just as Dhritarashtra and Gandhari had done. Treading the path accepted by his forefathers and great men to devote himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he lived in that way wherever he went. So he just left. Finished. My material life is finished. The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira observed that at the age of Kali, he didn't tell his brothers. The five Pandavas were like the five fingers on a hand. They worked together. And he didn't tell them. He just did it and he left. No goodbyes, no teary farewells. No, see you next life. Goodbye. I'm leaving. Oh, don't leave, please. Nothing. He just left, detached. The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira observed that the age of Kali had already arrived throughout the world and that the citizens of the kingdom were already affected by irreligious practice. Therefore, they decided to follow in the footsteps of their elder brother. They all had performed all the principles of religion and as a result rightly decided that the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna are the supreme goal of all. Therefore they meditated upon his feet without interruption. This is the end of it all. One may perform the greatest renunciation. One may not dress himself in torn clothes or whatever, but the essence of it is to focus the mind on Krishna and to prepare our consciousness for that is what we are doing, for the full devotional focusing our mind on Krishna, so when it comes the time when our body will drop, and it will happen to everyone, when that time comes, the soul whom we are will not take another material body based on the selfish and desiring material desires within the subtle body, within the mind. Rather, it will be focused, absorbed in Krishna, and therefore back to Godhead, to Krishna's lotus feet eternally. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of Lord Sri Krishna, known as Golok Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. So, the idea is, one wonders if they went to the back to Godhead in their material bodies, or one wonders whether they never didn't have material bodies and went back to Godhead. But when one reads the purports, there are a few verses like this, it seems clear that what is meant, but they went to Godhead in their very same bodies, is it means that they did not have to change their bodies to get a higher birth to go back home, back to Godhead. Because sometimes it is said, according to the Vanashrama system, that if you are born in one particular station in life, you cannot go back to Godhead or get liberation. What you have to do is perform your duties properly, and that will bring you to the next status of life, to the next highest one. And you perform your duties properly, and then finally you become to the brahminical platform, and then from the brahminical platform, after so many births, then you attain liberation. But here, due to their focusing their mind on Krishna, they circumvented, cut through the whole Vanashrama system, and rather than having to take so many births to go back to Godhead, in this life, in this body, they achieve the ability to do that. How again? By focusing their mind on Krishna. So therefore, in the purport, Prabhupada quotes from Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, saying that under the guidance of the spiritual master, by the process of diksha or initiation, exactly as a chemist can turn gunmetal into gold by chemical manipulation, that the person's consciousness and body, through the process of initiation and performing the process of devotional service, becomes changed and purified miraculously. So it circumvents the entirety of the Vanashrama system in that it requires many, many births. Then, because we were wondering, after we heard that Vidura went on pilgrimage after Gandhari and Dhritarashtra left, what happened to Vidura? And the answer is given in text 49. Vidura, while on pilgrimage, he left his body at Prabhash. Because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna, he was received by the denizens of the Pitrilok, where he returned to his original post. So he was Yamaraj and he went back there. Draupadi also saw that her husbands, without caring for her, were leaving home. She knew well about Lord Vasudev Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Both she and Subhadra became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and attained the same results as their husband. Now this is a very important and interesting purport. While flying an aeroplane, one cannot take care of other planes. Everyone has to take care of his own plane. And if there is any danger, no plane can help another in that condition. Similarly, at the end of life, when one has to go back home, back to Godhead, everyone has to take care of himself without help rendered by another. The help is, however, offered on the ground before flying in space. Similarly, the spiritual master, the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, and others can all render help during one's lifetime. But while crossing the sea, one has to take care of himself and utilize the instructions formerly received. So the pressure becomes on us, and the responsibility ultimately is ours alone to take care of ourselves at the time of death. and building up the strength and the knowledge and the ability in our life by taking good instruction and having good association with others in our life, so that at the time of death, which is so difficult, unlimitedly painful and frightening, so frightening we don't like to think about it, at that time, and amazingly enough, it's going to happen to everyone. At that time, what we have assimilated about transcendental knowledge and through our association will be tested by how well we can act at that time. So one has to take care of oneself and utilize the instructions formerly received. Draupadi had 5 husbands and no one asked Draupadi to come. Draupadi had to take care of herself without waiting for her great husbands. And because she was already trained, she at once took to concentration upon the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The wives also got the same results as their husbands in the same matter. That is to say, without changing their bodies, they reached the destination of Godhead. And then the final verse. We'll read the final verse in the purport. The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like the Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees is absolute in itself, and thus to hear it with a devotional attitude is to associate with the Lord and constant companions of the Lord. By the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can attain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead, without failure. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Pandavas Retire Timely. Okay. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Sasha? Prabhupada explained that a few reasons. One is that he wanted to set the example that at the end of one's life, as soon as there is someone competent to do one's work, one should retire and focus one's mind on Krishna. So there was that person, and that person was Maharaj Prickett. And we'll hear in the succeeding chapters how Maharaj Prickett took up that service and became glorious by his dealing with Kali. So the other understanding is this was Krishna's desire. And how did Maharaj Yudhisthira know that? Because Narada Muni told him that his mission, his staying on earth, his own staying on earth was to be upheld until Krishna left, and then he was free to go back home. Any other questions?
You mentioned building the possible withdrawn endowment.
Yeah.
So
It may not be the most accurate way to see, but it's a nice way to see. Because he was an eternal associate, and what powers were withdrawn from him, from Arjuna, were the powers that when, because it was now time for him to go back home, back to Godhead. So the powers to do the particular duty that Krishna had given him were for the removing of the burden of the world, and that was already completed. So he left him with the powers of going back home, back to Godhead, but removed the elements that were no longer needed. Krishna doesn't remove from his devotees their Krishna consciousness. That's our own free will. And the power of the conditioning, the power of the illusory energy, and not taking shelter enough of Krishna's names, etc.
Another question.
Yeah? They associate with Krishna, they're so pure that remembrance of Krishna immediately brings them in Krishna's association.
So, is that process recommended for us?
Remembering Krishna?
Well, there's another process serving Krishna's
devotion. No, they all come to that, remembering Krishna. Shushusho Sharadanasya Vasudeva Kitarachi Sianma Seveya Vipro Punitirtana Sevana. The result of serving the devotees is the Vasudeva Kataruchi, attraction to Krishna Kata, pastimes of Krishna, etc. And the result of that is one develops an affinity for Krishna. And the result of that is one remembers Krishna naturally with great devotion.
We had that Krishna's disappearance is like the act of a magician, and that it's mysterious.
And that it doesn't really happen.
What about with these eternal associates like the Pandavas, obviously?
Yeah, same.
Right?
Yeah. But they don't, in other words, they don't die when they die. They just go on somewhere else to perform service. Krishna explains this in the beginning of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, many, many births you and I have taken. What is that? Na tvevaham jatunasam? No, that's really... Huh? Yeah. Many, many births both you and I have taken, but I can remember them, but you cannot. And why? Because you changed your body. And I am my body. Krishna is his body, he says. And his body is full of bliss, knowledge, eternity.
So these descriptions of the time of his departure to be considered in the same light as past ones?
Yeah. To set example, to do so many things.
Yeah.
Their departure was quite dramatic, as Krishna's was dramatic. Chris, do you have a question? Yeah. Is there any way of what? Of not going back? Yeah, there's 8,400,000 different ways. I can't exactly follow what you mean. They went within this body. They attained. They had the qualification to go back home, back to Godhead. Not that they took. It doesn't seem to indicate they went back in the particular body that they, in that particular body. But rather, they didn't have to change their body to get the qualification to go back home, back to Godhead. It's a little bit tricky the way it's described, but that's what it seems to be describing. Because we certainly wouldn't want to try to get in with this thing. Is that all right? But once we develop our body, our spiritual body, then we can go back to Godhead. The true nature, which our true nature, which is within us like a seed.
One is very simple. Among the symptoms of vajikali, you said, is it nepotism?
Nepotism.
What does it mean?
Means giving your relatives the prime positions just because they're your relatives.
Jobs for the boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Another one. How old was Nara Yudhisthira?
Well, he was older than Krishna. Because Krishna was 125. Huh? He was a young 130, say, or something like that.
What was the average age at this time? Is that normal?
They lived a good life. This was just like at the conjunction of Kali Yuga. So it was sort of, in Kali Yuga people live at most 100 years, so it was just before that. People used to live more. But not at the conjunction.
Not that junction.
I would say.
And all these ages have been mentioned.
Bunky actually knows because he's 745. I could still dance in kirtan.
Average.
Give or take a few hundred years.
Average was a thousand
years.
Krishna here lives at 125.
What's the difference?
So he
was
a child compared to
those times. Now some lived all. You see that when they talk about the kings.
Okay, the last question comes to mind after hearing this in their spiritual bodies. When you go back to God and you get a particular spiritual form of understanding. Does it mean it doesn't change? Is it according to, like, there's a dynamic relationship with the Lord as per what He wants to do? Like,
what He wants to do or what you want to do?
Well, obviously,
He reciprocates with how we wish to serve Him. So, because the serving desire is constant within the soul at that point, and the love is developed, then we get a particular... We grow it more or less into a specific form.